Allen Ginsberg's 1956 poem Howl opens with one of the most resonant phrases in modern poetry. Quote, "I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness." 30 years later, Ginsberg entrusted a Columbia University medical student with materials not shared with anyone else, including psychiatric records that documented how he and his mother struggled with mental illness. Stephen Wine was that student, and his new book is Best Minds, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Ultimately, what year was it when Allen Ginsberg handed you this material?
1986.
Then the question is, why now then to look at this and to ask the questions that you ask in the book?
A couple of reasons. At the time, I was a young medical student, and Allen handed me what seemed to me to be like a literary treasure. And I knew it was going to take some time for me to learn psychotherapy and psychiatry, to have an informed perspective, for example, on his experience in psychotherapy. I mean, he handed me the notes that the psychotherapist took in the sessions when he was admitted at New York State Psychiatric Institute for 8 months when he was 23 years old. It's such an important time in his life. So I wanted to understand how psychotherapy worked and how psychiatry worked so that I could adequately deal with that material. But then it was more than that, too. It was understanding other things that were very important, understanding Allen's experience, such as what it would mean to walk with William Blake. Allen had visions in which he felt that he made a direct connection with William Blake, and this was of great significance to him. And it was like a kind of religious conversion, as William James explained. So honestly, it took some time to be able to integrate all these different areas of knowledge. There was another dimension to it also. I really felt like I could not write and share the book while Allen was alive, because there are a number of secrets revealed in there. And I spent time with Allen, talking with him about these things. And I felt that they were really painful and difficult for him to deal with, as they would be for anyone. And he was at the time in his 60s. And I don't know if I made the right decision or not, honestly, but I felt that it was best to wait until Allen passed before writing this book.
Ultimately, what was Allen Ginsberg diagnosed with?
A diagnosis that's not used anymore, but the diagnosis is called pseudoneurotic type schizophrenia. And what that diagnosis was meant to convey was a person who was at their core psychotic, but was using a lot of neurotic defenses to compensate for that. The concern was that eventually he would go psychotic. And that's, in fact, what the doctors initially predicted when he was there, that he would become schizophrenic like his mother. Obviously, that didn't happen. Now, retrospectively, we could say that Allen had very good outcome for his condition, if we think that was the condition that he had. These are issues that I get into in detail in the book. I think about those issues of diagnosis and treatment. And I mean, the perspective that people were looking at in the 1940s is not the same that we would use today, but I think it has some value. And of course, I look at it also from a literary and spiritual perspective. Allen actually liked that diagnosis, pseudoneurotic type schizophrenia, because he says, yes, we all have like madness in us. We all live close to that. And he recognized that as a poet, as an artist, it was good to have access to those experiences.
Talk a little bit more about that, of what it was about those experiences that helped motivate him to create the art that he did.
One of the most important experiences was having visions of William Blake in 1948, when Allen was 23 years old. And Allen, you know, had these experiences. He had these experiences while living in Harlem in New York City. And And it came to him like a total surprise. He felt like he had made a connection to the divine, whatever that means, but he didn't know exactly what to do about that. What he tried to do is write poems that would capture that experience, and he tried to write poems that would help others understand and even have such an experience for themselves. And so he really threw himself into it, and the more he did it, the more difficulty he faced. He became kind of unintelligible to himself and to those around him. And it's one of the facts that led to him being, or one of the factors that led to him being admitted to the New York State Psychiatric Institute those years. And so throughout his lifetime, those experiences have been central to him. And Alan has at times really focused on them and at times pulled back from them. In a way, the line that you read before from Howell is interesting to reflect on in relation to that, because that he wrote so 6 or 7 years after having those visions. And in that line, he says, "I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness." When he says, "I saw," he's saying he's offering himself as a witness, as a witness to the way in which all kinds of people that he knew directly and personally, including his mother and others, how they experienced a kind of madness in their lives. For some, it was ecstatic and religious. For others, it was is terrible and suffering. And he offers us, I'd say, a very full and ambivalent perspective towards madness. Like, is it that society's best minds were destroyed by society and rendered mad, or is madness what makes them the best minds? These are the questions that he was asking, and ultimately makes Howell a very kind of liberating document to read. One has the sense that there may be a great price to pay, but there's also great value for individuals and for society to focus on, think about, experience madness. So Alan spent, you know, the better part of the rest of his life working on those issues.
It really does. The book also illustrate what the limitations were of psychiatry in the 1940s and 1950s.
Absolutely, and in a number of different ways. What was really exciting about writing this book, and I hope about reading it, is it's really a kind of a leap through time into a very different era of psychiatry in American society. And so this is the 1940s in which hundreds of thousands of persons were confined to state mental institutions. Pilgrim State Hospital, like 100 miles from New York City on Long Island, had 13,000 patients in and of itself. It was the largest hospital in the world. Naomi Ginsberg, Alan's mother, ended up there and spent a good part of her life there and was lobotomized there. The book takes a very close look at the experience of people like Naomi, who, you know, you can't understand Alan without understanding Naomi. And Naomi was sadly one of these people who was disappeared into the hospital and lobotomized. But we found enough letters and enough things in her psychiatric records to be able to really paint a picture of her. So she isn't disappeared. She actually has a voice. We talk about that and about the tragedy of lobotomy and how that happened and what an important role that played in Allen Ginsberg's life, because the lobotomy happened just before his visions. And you could read in the book how these things connect together. But in terms of Alan had 8 months in the psychiatric hospital. Fortunately, no lobotomy for him, but he saw lots of them on the unit where he was. He got psychodynamic psychotherapy. Although the therapy that he got was very different from what we'd get today, it was not exactly what I would call trauma-informed. It was very focused on Freudian theory and sexuality. It was very wrong about homosexuality. But nonetheless, it was actually helpful to him. I think it did help Alan. So that's encouraging. I try to explain in the book how Alan was helped and what that means for, also what that means for psychiatry and psychotherapy today. You know, Alan was not against psychiatry. If anybody would have had a reason to be against psychiatry, it would have been Alan. But Alan was very positive about psychiatry and other mental health professionals and psychotherapy. He just wanted them to be more open and more tolerant and more supportive. He also believes that he was helped there. And in a way, he also tried to mentor me and would like to help other people in our field to learn from his experience in a positive way and become better at working with patients.
Stephen, what do you think for people who read this book and get a glimpse into what was going on and what he was facing as an artist, of the reading of the work? Does that change?
It does a little bit. I offer original readings of many of his poems, including especially Howl and Kaddish. And so, you know, and I think that when you understand the real life experiences that he went through, I think you have an even better appreciation for the work that he did as an artist and the distance that he had to travel in order to make these great, great poems. I don't hold that the work of the poems is equivalent to life or should be equivalent to life. I mean, one of the things that Alan did and that the other beat writers did and a lot of great artists did is make legends and myths from their lives. And of course, this is a great thing. We want that. And so we shouldn't make the mistake in thinking that what they write in their poems is the same as what happened in their lives. But, you know, I was really interested in the how of how he did it, how he worked with the traumas and adversity that he was exposed to and turned them into these great arts. And it helped me to be able to have a more full picture of what his life experience was. One example is that in Kaddish, which is his great elegy for Naomi Ginsberg, written in 1961, he says, "What have I left out?" And he talks about a secret. And I didn't really know what that meant. And I, in fact, thought that Alan left nothing out of that poem. It seemed like everything about Naomi was included. But the secret was the lobotomy. He didn't reveal in there that Naomi had been lobotomized, and what role he played in that. And that was a role that Alan had a lot of difficulty with, felt a lot of guilt about.
The name of the book is Best Minds, How Allen Ginsberg Made Revolutionary Poetry from Madness. The book is published by Fordham University Press. Stephen Wine, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks very much.
Again, the name of the book is Best Minds. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.